Hi, kids. It's Stefan from a comedy advice podcast. I'm here to tell you the word of the day is don't, as in
don't listen to this podcast if you're a child. Please, for the love of God. There are a lot of no-no words, and you just don't want to have that influence. I don't want to be having to talk with your mommy and daddy to say how their kid learned how to say cunt. So if your kids... You should already not be listening because I already said cunt. Oh, God, why do I keep saying? Okay, guys and girls, it's Stefan, and I'm here to just give you a little intro seasoning to the episode. Get it nice and seasoned before you dig in. We got Neil Nanda today, and Neil Nanda, he's a comedian, actor, and writer. You might have seen him on Jimmy Kimmel, on Comedy Central with Adam Devine's House Party, and Hulu, Amazon. He's all over the media. He's on TikTok. He's on YouTube, and he's a really funny dude. This guy grinds, too. We talk about a lot of things like how he got the VIP treatment when he was in Hawaii filming Adam Devine's House Party on Comedy Central. He talks about how he does 30 to 50 shows a month, or at least he did before Corona was happening, but he was doing it for 4 to 5 years. So this guy is really into comedy. And we talk also about, how he ended up closing a show with some great, great comedians like Bill Burr, Jay Moore, Dimitri Martin, Eliza Schlesinger, Dane Cook, Sarah Silverman, Neil Brennan, Anthony Jeselnik, and you'll find out what Anthony Jeselnik said when he found out that Neil was going to follow him. Funny, funny stuff. And then he also talks about how he got Adam Sandler to do one of his shows, which is pretty cool. So he's a really funny guy. I hope you guys support him. Please follow him on all his socials. If you guys get a chance, go and see him at a show if you're in the same spot. Or if you're not in the same spot, he's still doing Zoom shows. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening. I always appreciate it. And if you guys haven't, please subscribe, tell a friend, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That just pumps me up. It pumps me up. It gets me so... Oh, God, it's already 3 minutes in and I'm doing a Arnold and Schwarzenegger. Is that like a new deli? Arnold and Schwarzenegger. Hey, I'll be like your bagels. Pumped up. Oh, fluffy. Okay, all right. Okay, and here I go. A comedy advice podcast. An advice podcast for Stefan
and friends.
To make exaggerated statements not meant to be taken literally.
What was that, Stefan?
Comedy advice podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of A Comedy Advice Podcast. My name is Stefan, and I'm your host. Joining me today is a very special guest in LA. He's a comedian, actor, and writer seen on Jimmy Kimmel Live, Comedy Central, Hulu, and Amazon. He's performed all over the country with some of the country's greatest acts. He hosts one of the top 10 stand-up shows in LA, according to LA Weekly. Please welcome Neil Nanda.
Hey, beautiful intro, man. Thank you.
I was practicing it all last night, so I'm glad.
You're a little out of breath, but it's all right.
I got to practice that. I feel like my lung capacity isn't what it used to be, so three lines is really tough for me now.
A paragraph is too much. I get it.
Maybe I should go a little slower next time.
Yeah, how's Hawaii, by the way?
Hawaii's great, man. You can see there's a little breeze, so it's clearing off the heat from the sun. Yeah. But yeah, other than that, it's a breeze, man. It's really good.
Which island are you on?
I'm on the main island, Hamaui, I think it's called.
No, the main island, I believe, is Oahu or Kona, but I never know because they're always like, the big one. And I'm like, what? They're all big. Yeah, Maui's one of the smaller ones. So, yeah, you're on Oahu or Kona.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. I'm glad.
I'm going to tell you where you are.
Thank you for upstaging me already. I thought it was going to happen later in the game, but just right off the bat.
I come in hot.
For all of our audio listeners, by the way, my Zoom background is Hawaii, it looks like. What was it? Aloha?
Oahu. Have you been to Hawaii?
Nope, never been.
Never been to Hawaii? Man, you're missing out. I mean, you've kind of, it looks like you've been. Looks like you're there. But yeah,
Just a little imagination, and I feel like I'm there. I mean, I don't know any of the islands yet, but I think that should
be
my
next step.
Yeah,
you thought Maui was the big island, so that's a problem already. Great weed on Maui, though.
Really?
Yeah, I was in Hawaii. I did Adam Devine's House Party in Hawaii, and I was with Adam. This is how I know Adam Devine is a really cool person, we'll go ahead and start out the story with this Adam Devine is the coolest person story. And nice. I land in Hawaii and I get off like the shuttle bus and I'm like really hungry. And I'm like, yo, I'm trying to eat. And they were like, oh, Adam is throwing us a luau. And I was like, what?
Dang.
And they're like, Adam's throwing everybody a luau. So we go like half a mile down the beach and there's a legitimate luau, roasted pig, hula dancers. There's a fire pit. It's a legitimate, like, it's what you imagine would be a luau. So I pull up and I go, you know, it'd be really nice right now would be a joint. We're on the beach. It's a luau, sunset. We're not filming yet. So, you know, I can't perform high. So we're not filming yet. And I was like, can I get some weed? And Adam was like, I got you. And he starts going around and asking the PAs, the staff, the DP, everybody for weed. Nicest guy. Then he gets a joint from somebody. Somebody rolls him a joint and they hand it to him. And he goes, no, Neil asked for this. He gets to smoke it first. Coolest guy on the planet. That's all I needed.
Wow.
That's all I needed. That was it.
Wow.
He was also very nice the rest of the weekend and really fun and, you know, really cool. But that to me was like, all right, you're a good dude. The end.
That's really cool. If I ever ask for a joint, people usually do not go scouring the crowd asking for one, get it rolled, and then present it to me. So
yeah,
that's like primo VIP treatment.
It was beautiful, man. It was beautiful. What a good guy. But yeah, that was fun. Oahu was really fun. It's a beautiful island.
How long were you there for?
5 days or so. I tried to stay longer, but I couldn't afford it. It's mad expensive. Mad expensive. I tried to get Comedy Central. I was like, can I get like 2 more days? And they were like, no. And they sent my ass back.
That joint sent you back 1 day. So you're actually 4 days.
Right, yeah. So I got 4 days in there. It was a good time.
That's awesome. And how was it filming for Adam Devine's house party?
It was amazing. It was incredible. I mean, Adam Devine is such a professional. He does his own like warm-up and everything for the show. And because he's a celebrity, people are hype, you know? Especially in Hawaii. I'm sure they don't get that many celebrities performing in Hawaii. So he got that crowd really rocking. And I did have a little problem with my set because I did like a 10-minute set and then they cut it down to 5, right? And in the middle of the set I started rocking, dude. It was like the crowd was on fire. It was like applause break. And I was on stage, and in my head, I was like, oh, this is going to be fire on Comedy Central. They cut all that shit out. They cut it all out. They went, they went opener, 3 minutes, and then closer. Closer was good. I wasn't mad at the set. It still looked good, and it like my jokes still worked and everything. But the middle portion was like, I was on fire. And I was like, they got to use this. But the editor was lazy. The editor was like, all right, yeah, we'll just chop that and then put that there. And that's it. Because you can't control it, which is the worst part of doing these sets. Some people have the strategy where it's like, it's a 5-minute set. I'm doing the 5 minutes I want. And then they get out of there. But they were like, feel free to do like 8 to 10. And I was like, yeah, well, let's give them more options. You know?
Damn.
I fucked up. Because none of my favorite jokes were in there. But it was still good. I wasn't mad.
Yeah, you still got to go to Hawaii. You still got a premium joint from Adam Devine, so that's pretty good.
And I still get to complain about it. That's the best part.
That's true. You got a nice story out of it that you can complain about. That's good. I was also going to ask about that because you had 10 minutes that got trimmed down to 5 in Adam Devine's house party. You also had the 5 minutes that you did on Jimmy Kimmel. I was going to ask, how do you go about selecting which 5 to 10 minutes you're going with? Because obviously, I saw a 30-minute special of yours on YouTube, which killed. I loved it.
Thanks, man.
You at least have 30 minutes. And then I also heard on a podcast that you, before coronavirus, you were out grinding, doing like 30 shows a month. So almost a show a night.
So I actually made a rule for I used to open mic. Obviously, I'm a comedian. Like, that's just like how you have to open mic. And I don't know. One day I just got really sick of open micing. And I said, if I can fill my calendar with 30 or more shows a month, I'm not going to open mic. Because that's enough, you know? Even if they're bad shows. Even if it's a coffee shop with eight people, and one girl is like studying for the SATs, and she's like, I'm in high school. And you're like, sorry. And she's like, I have to figure out this word for the verbal section. And you're like, oh, but listen to me talk about my dick or whatever. You know, even if that's the show, I'll still do it and count it, because with open mics, especially in LA, with open mics, you get 3 to 5 minutes. So, and they're usually in the worst conditions possible, meaning there's like little to no people there, usually only comedians, half the people aren't paying attention. So even if I did a coffee shop show with 12 people, it was 10 minutes and it was an audience that wasn't comedian. So I was like, I'll count it. So nice. It was October 2015. I had 35 or 34 shows on my calendar. And I was like, let me see if I can just keep this rolling. And I kept it rolling for about 3 years. And then I was like, all right, I'll chill on 24 or 28 or 26. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I wasn't really getting picky. And then I also, at some point, I started headlining. So I was doing hours. And then I was like, well, it doesn't matter, because I'm doing like 26 shows, but six of them are hour long. You know what I mean? So I was like, I didn't really count the 30. But yeah, I've kept a steady 30 to 50 shows a month for about 4 to 5 years now. And but that was because that was my excuse to not open mic. It was just a motivation to not have to go to an open mic.
That's amazing. That's like motivation of, I'm not going to jerk off if I can have sex.
Yes.
And so if you get sex, that's way better.
Even if it's like horrible, she's not even paying attention. I mean, consensual, but she's like, I got to study. I got the SATs or whatever. You know, even with bad sex, you know, it's better than jerking off.
Oh yeah, every time. And you're improving, whether you know it or not. You're getting better stamina, you're maybe better stage presence.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm crossing over here with sex and stand up, but yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Great. It's practice makes perfect. It don't matter if it's good practice, bad, it's practice. It's hours. You know?
That's amazing. And I don't know that many LA comedians or a lot of comedians outside of the Arizona arena, but that seems to me like you're an extraordinary case where I'm not sure if all could. Okay, good. Because I
do not
denigrate your situation.
Dude, I don't even tell comedians my secret, because I know comedians who are more established than me that can barely get 20 shows in LA. And I mean, I just have like, I have like little secrets. It's not secrets, it's like specific bookers that I get on their good side, and then there's three shows that week, and then another booker who I'm really tight with, or that I like prove myself at some club, and I'm like, all right, there's two more, and then I'm a huge, huge dropout guy. I'm the biggest dropout guy, I think, in LA. I'm like one of three guys where, because you know, the Improv, the Store, and the Factory will have like Kevin Nealon or Dane Cook or whatever, but every day they're like, oh, sorry, I don't feel like driving there. Or they'll be like, oh, sorry, I got to shoot something in the morning, but I'm not going to make it. So I will get a text message 10 minutes before, like at 7:45, can you be here at 8? And I'm there. So I get a lot of last minute shows. So sometimes I'll have my schedule have like 22, 24 shows, and it'll turn into 35 because so many people drop out of shows.
Wow, that's really, really cool. And I was going to ask, how did you form these relationships? I don't want to go too deep into your secrets, because I want to make sure that...
Oh, it's not that much of a secret. It's just like, I mean, mostly my secret is being annoying and just annoying the shit out of people and asking for favors. And like, I always hold favors too, where like, I'm like, all right, these 3 months, I'm bugging these people, and I'm going to leave these people alone and bug them over here. And then I'm traveling over here, so I got to bug nobody for this month. And then I come back and bug these people. So it's there's some strategy to annoying people. But how did I prove myself? I basically, like, I'm a big believer in, like, first impressions. And so whenever I perform for the first time at your show or your venue, I try to bring it. I'll bring a material, even if I hate it. I hate probably 75% of my material in general at all times. And
really?
So even if I hate, yeah, the only material I really like is new-ish, like within 1 to 2 months of doing it. That's the That's the material I really like. And then everything else is like, all right, it works. You know, it gets the job done. So if I'm doing your show for the first time, I'm going to do old material and I'm going to kill doing my best stuff. And usually that works. I mean, it doesn't always work. You know, comedy. It's not an exact science. You know, there's a lot of times where I go up and I give my best shit and I'm bombing and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know. I don't got any other cards in the pocket, you know, or I'll be in the middle of a set and it's not, my set's not going well. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna throw this one in. This is gonna kill. And then it doesn't. And I'm like, okay, you win. Y'all win. I'm going home. That's it. Goodbye.
I remember this time that you were talking on, it was a podcast or something, where you were saying there was this killer lineup of comedians, like Sarah Silverman.
I'll never forget
And some others, and everyone bombed.
Never forget that show for the rest of my life. It was everybody, like Sarah Silverman, Whitney Cummings, Todd Barry, Kyle Kinane, Kevin Nealon, Neil Nanda. I was there. Dude, it was an incredible lineup. And, you know, I went up first and I thought like, and I bombed and I thought, okay, they just wanted to get me out of the way because no one knows who I am. And then when all these famous people come up, the crowd's going to give it to them. Nope.
Right.
Nope. I even blamed it on me for a minute. I was like, maybe I sucked so bad. I sucked all the energy out of the room. But I was like, by the third famous person, they should be hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it did not turn up. It did not turn up at all. And I've seen a few of those shows, but yeah, I was a part of one of those. Did I also tell you about the time I had to follow like every famous person? I don't know if you know.
No, I didn't hear about this. No.
So I was doing a show, and again, I'm 30 show a month guy, and that can work to my advantage or my disadvantage because sometimes I'll have a night where I have multiple shows, right? Mm-hmm. And this specific night I had two or three shows. So I showed up to the show late. It was an 8 o'clock show. I may have shown up at 9. And the show is supposed to go until about 10:30. So I'm not like late, you know? So I show up at 9 and I look at the lineup. And the lineup is literally like Bill Burr, Jay Moore, Dimitri Martin, Eliza Schlesinger, Dane Cook, Todd Barry, Sarah Silverman, Anthony Jeselnik, and Neil Brennan. This lineup was stupid.
Wow.
It was stupid.
And so, Neil Nanda.
And Neil Nanda. For some fucked up reason, I was on this lineup. So I don't know who fucked up. Somebody fucked up is what happened. Somebody was like, oh, I thought it was Neil Brennan. I thought we booked him twice. But, you know. But I show up at 9, and my mentality is, hey, there's so many famous people here. I should just go up soon. And pass the torch, let them take over the show, let them finish it off. And I'm waiting in the green room, and the booker is there, and he's like, you cool to go next? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then Eliza Schlesinger shows up, and she's like, hey, I need to go next. And I was like, okay, I can't, I had nowhere to be. So I was like, sure. She was like, I gotta get to the Comedy Store, so I gotta go next. And I go, okay, sure. Then Dane Cook shows up and goes, I gotta go next. And I'm like, okay, that's no problem. And then he's fighting with Eliza. They're like, well, what time is your set at the Comedy Store? My set's at the Improv at 10:30. And they're like fighting to go first. And then Neil Brennan shows up, and he's like, yo, I got to go next. And I'm just sitting there like, what's happening? So all these incredible comedians keep going up. I keep getting pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed until I'm second to last. And it's Anthony Jeselnik, who's not there yet, okay? And I don't remember who was on stage. I think like Todd Barry or somebody, or Jay Moore or somebody great was on stage. And I'm waiting in the wing, and I'm about to go up. And then Anthony Jeselnik shows up like a minute before I'm supposed to go up. And he's like, I got to go next. And I was like, really, dude? And he was like, are you following? And he looked at me and goes, are you following me? And I go, yeah. He goes, good luck. I was like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. Just in the most Anthony Jeselnik way you could possibly do that. And,
oh, my God.
Totally fit the character. Totally fit the character. And then Anthony Jeselnik goes up and destroys for 20 minutes. He was working on the one of his latest Netflix specials, and he was just doing the material from that. Dude murdered. He has notebook out, was going joke by joke, and it was like, he changed the tone of the room. After all these famous people, Anthony goes up, murders. Now, I'm closing the show. I'm going up now. I'm closing this show, man. I go out there, the wave of confusion from this crowd. I can't explain, dude. I go out there. Everyone's looking at me like, am I supposed to know who this is? Am I just dumb? Do we not? Is he? What move is this? Is this the guy from Deadpool? Who is this? Is this Aziz doing a character? I don't understand. I don't understand what's going on here. So for the first, shit. I don't know. I had an 8 minute set. For the first 3 to 5 minutes, I was just digging. I was digging myself out of a hole. It was chuckles to like medium laughter. And at one point, I can't believe I even said this on. At one point, I said, "I'm sorry, I'm not famous."
Oh no!
I did. I was digging. I was drowning. About minute 3 to 5, maybe like minute 4, let's say, I hit him with a big one and got a huge laugh. And I was like, "Oh my god!" And it was just the best feeling in the world. And then the rest of my set, they were like, "Okay, we trust this guy." So I closed really strong. Now the booker didn't see the first 4 minutes. He only saw my last joke. So the booker was like, "Dude, you killed. And you were able to follow all these people." And I was like, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I mean, I was great. I was great.
Right, because I wasn't going to be like, "Oh, you didn't see the first 4 minutes, you know?" But I will say to this day, Anthony Jeselnik is the hardest person I've ever followed. I followed a lot of famous people because you live in LA, they'll pop into shows. And Anthony Jeselnik was the hardest because he slowed the pace of the room down so much. It was so slow. And I went out there with energy trying to get him back up. And it was just a completely different vibe, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll never forget that night. I did learn something from that night. Slow down. I crackhead energy because I was so nervous. I went out there like, "Hey, guys." So like, I was, and people were just like, "Yo, chill. Who the fuck is it? I got to figure out who you are. Okay, chill. I got to figure out if you're Aziz Ansari doing a character or the guy from Deadpool real quick."
Oh, my God. That's an incredible story, first off.
Yeah.
And then it just led me to think, too, because if you're first starting out, I think some of the things that you might be thinking about is, how are these jokes doing? What's my style? Mm-hmm. How's my execution?
Oh, I was pretty young, too.
Oh, really? So that was
like
earlier
4 or 5
in your
years ago. I was probably like 6-7 years in. I had just done Adam Devine's house party. So I remember like, "Hey, please tell them I've been on TV because I don't want to just go out there and be like, you know."
Here's some dude.
I think I was probably 20. I was probably 25 or 26 at the time. So it was probably 4 years ago. Around then, yeah, I hadn't done Kimmel and I hadn't done some of the other stuff that I've done. But it was fairly early. It was early enough in my career where I was very intimidated.
Damn.
Because I had to do that. I had to do that in New York recently, and it didn't bother me. I guess that experience really changed my mentality because I had to do that in New York probably a year or so ago, maybe a year and a half ago. It was The Stand, which I love. I had a problem with them because of this night, but they have since made up for it, and I love them, and the club is incredible. But I did a night there once where they gave me, in New York, is so, they're organized in New York. They don't go, "Hey, it's an 11 o'clock show, see you at 11. They go, "Your set time is 11:30, right? So you show up and you know, okay, I'm going on stage at 11:30. So it's an 11 o'clock show and they go, "Your set time is 11:30. Great. I had a few other shows before. I show up about 10:45 or so. And I go, "Hey, am I set time 11:30? And they're like, "Yeah, set time's 11:30. Then they go, "Hey, Big J Okerson's here. Is it cool if he just goes up right before you do 11:40? "Oh, yeah, no problem. No problem at all. Big J Okerson, love him. Can't wait to see him. Yeah. Awesome. Hey, Nikki Glaser's here. Do you mind if she does like 15 and you go up like, you know, 11:55? No big deal. No big deal, dude. 11:55, no big deal." 8 comics later. Okay.
Oh, God.
Like God. The, you know, SpongeBob, 3 hours later, literally. Yeah. 8 comedians later. I can't do a French accent, but you know what I'm saying.
Hopefully the last one wasn't Anthony Jeselnik that was like,
"No, it
was
not. Thank God.
Me? Good
Thank
luck.
Thank God it was not Anthony Jeselnik. I would have left. I would have gone home. I would have got on a flight. I would have been like, yeah, I need to change my flight reservation. I would have been at JFK. So my set time went from 11:30 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. 2 hours. They pushed me 2 hours. And guess what? I'm closing the show. Yeah. I went from going in the middle to closing the show. Because people would show up that were on the show that had like a midnight set time or like a 12:30 and be like, I need to get out of here. Ari Shaffir would show up. I need to go. You Jeez, know, so-and-so yes. would show up. And so everybody just wanted to leave. And I had like beef with the club because of this, because I was upset. I had also had people there to see me that were like, mm-hmm. I thought you were going up at 11:30. And, you know, I told them, I was like, yeah, 11:30 set time. And they waited around till 1:30. And because all these incredible comedians had just gone up, all the crowd work in the room had been done, you know?
Yeah.
So I can't do crowd work. So the way that I broke the ice was, because I had been watching the show, the way that I broke the ice with the show is I went up there, I said, I can't do crowd work. Everyone's been talked to. Everyone's been, Jay Oakerson, Nikki Glaser, everybody talked to you guys already. And then I started pointing everybody out that they had done crowd work with. I was like, all right, you're the black dude that likes dildos. You're the girl who tried to fuck her mom's cat. You're the dude who blah, blah, blah. And I just went in on every, just specifically, and I go, now that we got that out of the way, I'm going to tell you guys some jokes. And I did my set. I did my set, and it was great. And I think it was because of that night that I had to follow all those famous people. I just wasn't intimidated anymore. I was like, hey, it's comedy. If jokes work, they're going to work. And I set the precedent for that to where I was like, I'm not going to try to do anything crazy or original or try to, you know, do crowd work and warm you guys up. I'm going to come. It's already been done. It's 1:30 a.m. You know, you guys have had 2 hours of people railing on you. I'm going to just point you out and I'm going to do my set. And it went really well.
Damn.
Yeah.
And that's really cool how that moment where you had to follow all of those crazy famous comedians mm-hmm. in LA was a formative moment, where it also could have been a moment where you're like, fuck this. Or maybe you're just like, what am I doing with myself? And you took it as a positive.
I took it as a positive. I remember the next day sitting down and going, what could I have done better? Because like I remember thinking like, it took me 4 minutes to get that crowd. How could I have got them faster? And I realized I could have slowed down and checked the pace of the room. And one thing that was shitty, and no shade on the booker, is obviously these famous people are going to get, you know, they're going to get way more time. Anthony Jeselnik is going to do 20. Dimitri Martin is going to do 15. Sarah Silverman is going to do 15. And then he goes, Neil, you're closing and you're doing 8. And I was like, yo, I don't like, because with the closer, you got to close, you know, you got to bring them in and close the night outright. So I produce shows. I'll never give a closer 8 minutes. That's not enough time. That's just a warm up. You know, I'll give you 8 up top. But yeah, so that was really tough. But now, because the reason that I sped up my set was because it was 8 minutes. And so I was like speeding through the joke. I was like, I got to get these out. And now looking back, you know what? I should have slowed down. And if I ended up doing 9, he's not going to kill me. If I ended up doing 9:20, he's not going to shoot me in the face. As long as I do well, you know what I mean? I produce shows, and I give people about a minute to 2 minutes of running the light. After that, you know what you're doing. You know what I mean? You get like one. If you're killing, you get like a minute and a half. I did have a famous dude, run it by 15. That was egregious. I'm not gonna name names, but it's a good story. It's a good story for another time when I'm talking shit.
And by the way, you run a couple shows also, mm-hmm. or ran at least before Corona shut everything down.
Oh, they're coming back.
Nice. Okay. And you've also been able to get some famous people on those shows too. Like, if you wouldn't mind sharing, you were able to get Adam Sandler on one of your shows.
I literally just told the story to a friend like a couple days ago, but it's a crazy story. Do you want to know like how I got him and what happened and everything?
Yeah.
It's wild. It's pretty wild. So, the show is in Santa Monica. It's in Santa Monica at the Westside Comedy Theater, which is in the most touristy part of LA. I don't know if you know, LA too well, but Santa Monica, the promenade, it's like a mini Times Square basically. And okay.
It's like the Maui of LA.
It's the Maui of LA. Big island of LA. And so he, my girlfriend was at a sushi restaurant, RIP, actually burned down the protest. Yeah.
Oh shit. I thought that was the name of it. And I was like, that's no, grim.
It's called Got RIP it. Burn Down the Protest. No, it's on the promenade, and yeah, somebody lit it on fire. It's on, it's gone. It's not there anymore. Shit. As of like 3 days ago. But RIP Sake House. It was called Sake House. We used to love that Got spot. It. Great spot. And hopefully they had insurance. But we'll see. I guess we'll see. So my girlfriend is at Sake House, and it has like glass windows and, or glass like doors all around. You can see onto the street. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. she texts me. It's 7:30. My show starts at 8. And she texts me and she goes, "Hey, Adam Sandler's outside the sushi restaurant." And I was like, "No, he's not." I think I just texted her back, "No, he's not." And she's like, "I'm looking at him right now. It's Adam Sandler outside the sushi restaurant." And so I was setting up for my show. I was like doing mic check and writing the lineup on it. And I go, "I got to go. Adam Sandler's outside." And this is about a block and a half away. So I start running towards Adam Sandler. She tells me what he's wearing too. And so I see him in the distance, right? I'm running towards him. He's walking away. I'm running towards him. And I don't want to be a psychopath. I can't roll up to him like sweating and catching my breath. So I stop. You know, maybe a few feet before him, I stopped running. I started just kind of like, just kind of walking, catching my breath, looking like a normal person who was behind him the whole time.
Try not to give off that energy that you're right behind him. So he's like, yeah.
So I started walking really fast, and he's with his wife also. He's walking with his wife. And, you know, I wasn't like stalking, you know, I didn't run up on him. I ran up close to him. Then walked up on him. So I walk up on him and I give him a double take, right? Because he's like to my right. And I just like look to my right and I give him a double, like, "Oh, hey, is that Adam Sandler?" And he's famous. He gets it. He's not like confused. He's not like, "Why is this guy staring at me?" You know? He was just like, and he gave me the like, "Oh, hey, how you doing? Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I'm Adam Sandler." I don't think he said, "Yeah, I'm Adam Sandler."
Yeah, to just in case ever said that. Confused him for anyone else. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Sandler. What's up? So shabba-da-boo. I don't think he said shabba-da-boo, but I heard it. So
on the inside.
Yeah, he said it on the inside. So he says, I say hello. I stop him very kindly. I go, "Hey man, I'm really sorry to bother you right now." And then before I said anything, he introduces me to his wife. Such a gentleman. Before he goes, "Wow. Oh, by the way, it's my wife Jackie." I'm like, "Oh, hi, Jackie. Nice to meet you." Shake her hand.
Was she like, "I'm Jackie Sandler"?
Yeah, I'm Jackie Sandler. Literally. She's like, "I'm Jackie Sandler." She had the same voice. It was shabba-da-boo. She said shabba-da-boo, too. It must run in the family, I guess. So so I stop him and I go, "Hey, man, I got a show right here in this at this theater, the Westside Comedy Theater." And he'd done a show there before, not my show, but a show. So he's like, "Oh, yeah, I like that place, shabba-da-boo." Said shabba-da-boo again. And I was like, "Yo, man, my show starts in 30 minutes. Would you please drop by? You're welcome to do as much time as you want. You're welcome to, you know, you could just fart on stage. And that's great." And he was like, "I don't have any more material. Skibbity-bop." Or whatever. And I was like, "You don't have any," he said he didn't have any new material. And I was like, "Come on, man, like you can do old material, it doesn't matter." And he was like, I'll drop by some other time." And I was like, "All right, man, we're there every Friday at 8 o'clock. And he goes, "Every Friday?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "8 o'clock? And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "All right, I'll come by sometime." Never saw him again, right? This was like October. January rolls around, right? And I'm on stage, and I'm having a night, okay? I'm on stage at my show, and it's one of those nights where I'm having a great set. I do my show every Friday, so I use it as a room to experiment, to try new material, to fuck around. So a lot of times, I don't do that well, you know? I would say it's a range of, like, good, great, okay, bad, horrible. So it could have gone, you know, it could have gone anywhere, you know, say 20% of the time horrible, 20% of the time like okay.
Yeah.
30% of the time, good. 20% of the time, amazing set. This was one of those nights where I'm just having, like, I'm connecting with the crowd. My crowd work's working. I tried new material. The new material's working. And I remember having, like, this killer set, dude. I remember, like, getting off stage on a high. I get to the green room. Our theater is very strict about getting out on time as far as, like, because there's other shows. There's a 10 o'clock show, a midnight show. So we have to get out so they can reset the room, get everybody into the venue. And, you know, all you have to give them, like, I give them at least 15, 20 minutes, you know. 9:45 is when there's, like, a hard out. I got to get out of there. So it's, like, 9:30, and the headliner's in the green room, and he's going to do 10. So I'm like, hey, dude, you got to get out there. Like, we're running late on time. Like, I need you to get out, do your set so we can leave. And he's just texting on his phone in the green room, and he goes, nah, man, I'm after Sandler. And I go, what? And he goes, yeah, I'm after Adam Sandler. I'm in the green room. There's no Adam Sandler around. I think he's fucking with me. I'm like, are you you're fucking with me? What do you mean you're after Adam Sandler? So dumb. Just, dude, get on stage. Like, I legit am like, dude, you got it. This is my show. You got it. I don't want to get in trouble with the theater. And there's a host on stage, and she goes, guys, please. My horrible impression of Blair Saki. Pretty good impression, actually. She's like,
I thought it was Adam Sandler for a second.
Yeah, this is Adam Sandler. And this is Adam Sandler Saki. And she's on stage, and she's like, guys, please, no cell phones, no cameras. If you're caught taking a picture or video, you'll be asked to leave. And now I'm like, what the fuck is going on, right? And then she goes, give it up for Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler is hiding. He's hiding behind the bar of the restaurant, pops up, walks through the crowd, high fives everybody, gets on stage, and does a half hour. Does a half hour. Yeah. Told us he was going to do 5 to 10. I just want to do 5 to 10. Shabba-da-boo. 5 to 10. Shabba-da-boo. 5 to 10. He just said, I'm going to do 5 to 10. And I saw what happened as a comic. I saw what happened. He was up there, and he was doing so well. He was crushing. And in his head, he was like, all right, I can do a few more jokes. So he starts going through his phone. He has phone notes, and he's going through it. And he just does like 25, 30 minutes. And dude, it was magnificent. So I run to the door. There's only one exit at this place. I know he's not going to stick around. He's not trying to hang out with this crowd. He's not trying to hang out with these comedians. Mm-hmm. So I run to the exit because I know as soon as he gets off stage, he's going to exit. And he doesn't even get off. There's a green room path to the stage, but he jumps off stage, walks through the crowd, high-fiving everybody again, high-fiving away. I'm waiting at the door, and this is the best part of the story, by the way. The greatest part of the story. I'm standing at the door, and I just want to say thank you, you know? So I go, hey, man, thank you so much for dropping by. And he goes, oh, yeah, you were the guy that I met on the street, shabba-da-boo. And never gets old. Never gets old.
That's going to be the name of the episode, by the way.
Shabba-da-boo? Yeah. That's a good episode. So he goes, he was like, oh, yeah, you're the guy that I ran to on the street. Shikibidi-bop-bop-boo-boo-boo. And I was like, yeah, man, that was me. And then right before he leaves, he goes, hey, man, were you on stage when I walked in? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, hey, you're really funny. And I was like, thanks so much. I came in my pants so quick.
You shabbity-booed in your pants.
I shabbity-booed all over my – dude. I jiggity jizzity boobity bopped in my pants so hard. Oh man, it was a problem that I had to clean that shabbity boo up. It was a situation. But the coolest part about it was that, you know, as comedians, we have this, like, if there's a show going on, we have comedian voice when we talk to other comedians because there's a show going on. We don't want to interrupt. So we're like, hey man, that was really funny. You know, that was great. Hey, good stuff, man. Blah, blah. Adam Sandler's so famous, I don't think he remembers that, you know? So Adam Sandler loudly during the show is like, hey, man, you're really funny. Great stuff. Yeah, great. And then he walks out. He says it so loud that the crowd start as he leaves the venue, the crowd starts high-fiving me. The people around start high-fiving me because, like, yo, Adam Sandler just said you were funny. I was like, I know. I just shabbity-booed my pants. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my God. And there was a high-five ripple effect where it came from Sandler to you.
That's how famous he is. If he compliments you, you get high fives. It wasn't the whole crowd. It wasn't like 100 people high-fived me, but like 10, 12. Dude, that's enough.
That's way more than zero.
That's way more than zero. It was just like whoever was an earshot of the compliment of me shabbity booing my pants. They high-fived me. God. But yeah, that's the Adam Sandler story. And he has since that day, he dropped in a few more times to run his, he was doing that Netflix special with the music. Mm-hmm. And so he would show up with a guy. There would be a guy. It was so funny because the theater would be like, "Hey, Neil, you have a very special guest coming. We can't tell you who." And I was like, "Okay." And they're like, "Can you please reserve 30 to 40 minutes for this person?" And I was like, "Who is this? Who is Eddie Murphy? Who is this?" You know, I had no idea. And then I would show up and there would be a piano on stage. And I was like, "Zach Galifianakis? Dimitri Martin? Like, who is it?" And it was Adam Sandler doing his songs.
Damn.
Yeah, it was crazy. And he would pop up right before a set, pop out immediately after. Don't want to talk to nobody. He was very nice. It wasn't like a rude thing. It was like, he's too famous. He can't be like, like, I can't imagine Adam Sandler in our green room like, "So, what's up?" You know what I mean? Like, shabbity boo. You know, like,
you guys try that sushi place? Like, yeah, there's not.
I can't imagine that. I mean, I have been in the green. I mean, because of the show, I have been in the green room with some really cool people, and they're generally really good hangs. One of my favorite hangs is Dimitri Martin. Just always the nicest. He always acts like he doesn't want to be there at first. He's like, "Oh, I gotta try out these jokes and blah blah," and then he hangs out for hours, telling stories. And I'm like, "You want to be here? I know you want to be here." You know, but he's always acting like it's work. He's always like, "Oh, dude, gotta get this 10 minutes down. It's not back to work." And then he's like, "Hey, what's up? Let's go eat. Let's hang out." And it's like, all right. He's still
that's
lonely.
Awesome. And,
he's great.
And he was,
I love Dimitri.
And was Dimitri Martin one of your kind of comedy inspirational heroes?
Yeah, did I not? Oh, man. Dude, I was a creepy boy to him. I'll tell you this story real quick. It's a real quick one. Dimitri was absolutely one of my inspirations because when I started comedy, I only did one-liners. If you saw some of my stuff with like the piano, and you saw some of my stuff, if you saw my half hour, some of my one-liners, and some of those jokes I wrote when I was 19, 20, 21 years old. I wrote when I was very young.
Damn.
And some of them I even wrote in high school and kept until I was 20, 21, whatever. So I brought a lot of those jokes back. And it was because I used to watch Mitch Hedberg, Stephen Wright, Dimitri Martin. I used to watch the one-liner guys, and I was like, that's comedy. I thought that was comedy. Wow. It is. It's a form of comedy, but I thought that was all comedy was. Mm-hmm. So huge, huge, huge Dimitri Martin fan. And one of the first like famous or successful comedians I had on my show. But I saw him because like whenever he was on a lineup in L.A., I made it a point to go check it out. And I saw him one night, and he was like, on stage, and he was like, he was bombing. I'm just gonna say, he was bombing. Everybody bombs. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it. We all bomb. So Dimitri's bombing, and he's having one of those like almost meltdown bombs where he's on stage and he goes, "Man, I should just quit. This sucks." And he goes, "You know," and he's on stage and he goes, "You know, a lot of comedians, like when they die, they leave a legacy, like, you know, George Carlin, like, you remember, like, thought-provoking stuff he said. Like, me, it's like, no one's going to remember these one-liners. No one gives a shit." And he's like really, like, having this meltdown. And so I go up to him after he gets off, and I had met him before, so he recognized me, which gave me, like, the in for the conversation. And I was like, "Hey, Dimitri, what's up?" And he's like, "Oh, hey, how you doing, man?" And I was like, "Hey, I just want you to know, like, you're like one of the greatest comics, and like I grew up, and like you're one of the reasons I do comedy. So like I don't want you to think that like your comedy doesn't matter." And then he goes, "Oh, dude, up there?" I was like, "Yeah, what you said up there. I just wanted to make sure you weren't." He goes, "Oh, dude, I was totally joking. I didn't really feel that way." And I was like,
"Oh no,
oh my bad." And I was like, "Ha ha ha ha." And he was like, "Thanks, man, but like I was totally joking. Don't think I'm like losing my mind," or I was like, no, you're good. I'm sorry. And it was just super awkward. It was super weird. But the cool thing about Dimitri is I hung out with him. He's done my show like 5 to 10 times since then. And I've done other shows with him, and he's completely acted normal, like it didn't happen. So I respect that. Maybe he's like, "This guy's weird. Don't talk to him." But I don't know. Damn. I was a little creepy with him.
That is hilarious, though. God. Yeah. Well, Neil, thank you so much for the interview portion. I was expecting to do 20 minutes, but you're just such a fascinating human being that we went to 50. So that's awesome.
Oh, damn.
I'm going to turn on the compliment shower, as I usually do, where I try to get our guests a little wet. But I think you are, well, you're already on the trajectory towards stardom. I mean, you closed for Anthony Jeselnik, so that's pretty
barely.
Great. But I mean, just seeing you grinding that goal for 30 shows a month, the actual being able to learn from the things that happened from when you did follow Anthony Jeselnik and just adapting to different situations, I feel like that's going to get you so far. And so I feel like you've already hit this point where you're just so close to being another Dimitri Martin, Anthony Jeselnik. You have your own style, which I really like too, because I know that you said your inspiration were those comics with the one-liners, but seeing your comedy, I mean, you've integrated piano into some of the bits. You talk a little bit about your roots with your family, your parents, and that's hilarious. And then you put these twists on just everyday life things, and I think it's hilarious. So
thanks, man.
I'm going to be looking out for you, man.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got about 10 minutes. Do you want to go and do some self-help stuff?
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right, we're going to dive in. But before we do, we like to center ourselves with an inspirational quote. Before we start off with the quote that I've selected, I usually like to ask our guests if they have any inspirational quotes that help them get through their days, especially in the tough times. Do you have any in your back pocket that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and quote myself.
Nice.
And
shibbity boo.
Yeah, shibbity boo my pants. Neil Nanda. This is something I hold true to myself, and I try to tell people this to encourage them and to give them inspiration. I always like to say, not everything is for everybody. Okay? Yeah. Maybe you should just quit. You know? I'm trying to inspire people. You know what I mean?
That's really nice. I like
that.
Yeah,
not everything is for everybody. Okay? A lot of people try to do too much. Okay? Not everything for everybody.
I really like that. It kind of reminds me, I don't know if you've ever seen the animated classic Ratatouille, where...
Oh, of course.
They say, anyone can cook, where it's like, anyone can cook, but that doesn't mean anyone really can. It's just, you can... people you might not expect can cook.
You know, and think about cooking. I have a cooking theory. I think cooking... Okay. I don't know. I have theories.
Let's hit it.
My cooking theory is that cooking, if you can read... you can cook. So people that are bad cooks, I assume, can't read. Because all it is reading instructions. That's all it is. 1/4 cup of, oh, did that say half? Did that say 1 cup? Oh, no. You're a bad cook. You can't read. So if you can read, you can cook. So yeah, anyone who can read can cook. That should be the quote.
That might be a better quote. I might debate that just because I'm a horrible cook. I also can't read that well either, but it's almost like the
theory proven. Prove my theory right there.
But it's also kind of like the Kama Sutra, where you see these positions that look delightful, but then you're like, how do I get into that?
Yeah, and
then
they might... physical. That's physical. Okay, you're telling me you don't know how. You tell me that you don't have the physical ability to chop. You don't got the physical ability to stir. You don't got the physical ability to sprinkle. Come on. Come on, Kama Sutra is different because like body types and like size and weight and lifting, that's different. Okay, I'm talking the kitchen. If you out there like, man, I can't lift this pot, then yeah, you can't cook. If you're like, I don't know, I just can't. My arm won't stir this butter. If something's wrong with your arm, you can't stir butter. Then yeah, maybe you can't cook. But if you are an able-bodied person who can read, you can cook.
This is also putting a lot of trust in the recipe makers, where sometimes they might leave out a step or not be as articulate as they need to be. So I might
accidentally got the internet?
Sprinkle
you not got the
something.
Internet? Go on the internet, look up any recipe, and guess what they got for the recipes? Reviews. Somebody will tell you if you miss something. And guess what? I don't go to the 2-star reviewed recipes. I go to the 4.5 and above, okay? 4.5 and above. and that shit'll be nice. You're making excuses, man. I think you just don't want to cook.
You're
Some
calling
just don't
me out.
Want to cook.
I really don't. I really
That's
don't.
That's all it
I
is.
I have no desire to be able to cook. Sometimes.
I've never sometimes. Understood anybody who's like, I'm a bad cook. I'm like, then you can't read. That's it. That's my cooking theory.
Or it's just the desire's not there.
Or not everything is for everybody.
Oh, man. Bringing it back.
There you go.
Bringing it back.
Inspirational quote. Maybe you should quit.
All right. That's good. Okay. All right. Now we've got our inspirational quote. This actually comes from a robot called InspiroBot. And it uses AI to take some of the most wisest words known to man, mash them together for a beautiful inspirational quote. All right. You ready to hear this one this week?
Yep.
InspiroBot says, pretend to be ashamed of yourself.
I like that. I like that. Let me tell you why I like that. Because it's like be humble, but don't be humble. You know what I mean? It's like act humble. But like, no, I don't. These people don't deserve to be around me. You know what I mean? act like you ashamed of yourself. I do that all the time, man. I'm always like, oh, thank you so much, whatever. But I'm like, you smell. You know what I mean? Like, I've been there before.
So, are you ashamed of yourself, or you're ashamed of the other people?
I'm ashamed, but I pretend to be ashamed of myself.
Oh, got it. You're like, I feel the shame where I can be at your level.
Yeah.
And then
I always, this is an actual inspirational quote that, you know, goes around in comedy lives, like keep your head down and keep working, you know, where it's like, you know, be humble, but continue to work very hard. I've always taken that to heart. But at the same time, like I'm humble and I work really hard, but at the same time, kind of pretending to be humble. You know, I'm pretending to be ashamed of myself. I'm not really. Yo, I just kill. Why am I supposed to be ashamed? You know what I mean? Or when I bomb, I guess, yeah, there's some serious shame there. That's not pretending. Oh, man, that bomb lasts for like 3 days, too. That's the other thing. It depends on how hard I bomb. Usually I would say 24 hours, but it can last for a few days if it's real bad. You know, I don't got to pretend to be ashamed at that point.
That's true. When you do crush, though, I think that shame, that veil of fake shame is a good thing to have over you, because then it gives you that likability. People are like, oh, he's just like us. When you're like, oh, yeah, I am just like you, except way funnier. So I'll keep that to myself. But to connect with you guys.
Right. When I kill, I do pretend to be ashamed of myself until I've had like four more drinks. Then I'm like, I'm fucking killing it, man. You hear that? You got on tape? Fuck you. You know, it depends. It's a you know, but usually by then there's only like three people left, so it's all good.
So it's okay. Yeah, there's a certain time that you can actually take that veil, that shame veil, and then just
For sure,
be your true self. I like that.
Oh, for sure.
I think this is also good for saying sorry. Maybe if you're not ashamed of something that you did, but people think that you should be. Maybe you said something bad on Twitter. Maybe your parents caught you.
Oh yeah, I've had to do that a couple times. I had a couple times where I had to pretend to be ashamed of myself, especially online, on the internet. Oh yeah, all the time. Oops, my bad. I'm gonna take a day to think about what I said. Never thought about it again.
So I think this actually might be a pretty good quote from InspiroBot.
Pretty good. Robot killed it.
Yeah, good job. Moving on, we have a quick question. A fan brought it in. Thank you, Sean, for finding this question. It reads, how can I get my boyfriend to be more clingy and available? I'm really in love with this guy, and it sucks to see him online and active on his social media, but not responding to me. Any tips on how to get them to be clingy or head over heels for you? Sincerely, if you like it, then you better put a cling on it.
Okay, I like that. Simple advice. Simple. Very simple. Plastic surgery. That's it. I mean, come on. You're a dude. I'm a dude, right? We like variety. We like things that are different. You know what I'm saying? I can't even watch the same porn twice. You know what I mean?
There's a half-life.
Yeah, well, there's a half-life. So I'll watch a porn and I'll be like, I'll see it come up and I'll be like, seen it, skip, seen it, skip. I can't watch the same person twice. So if you just change who you are, He's going to keep clinging on to you and fall in love with the different people you are. Get a new nose. Get some new lips. Maybe some new ears. Switch it up. Get a new eyebrow. I don't know. Dye your hair. I don't know. Get new titties. Get old titties. Get small ones. Get big ones. Get a big butt. Small butt. It don't matter. As long as it's different.
Maybe you could make it inflatable so you could shrink it so it could add some variation. I like that. Yeah. So basically, after every time they have sex, change something up to keep it interesting.
Yeah, keep it interesting. Then he'll be like, oh, man, I got a new girl. You know, he'll feel like he's cheating, you know?
Change your name. I mean,
change your name. Change your gender. Who knows? Maybe he's into it.
Oh, there you go.
Just change everything. Every day, do something a little different. And I guarantee you, he's gonna put the cling on it.
Oh my God,
that was horrible incredible. Advice. You need like $500,000 to do that advice.
I mean, isn't there half a million dollars
to take my advice?
Isn't there some like DIY stuff? Aren't there corsets or just like balloons?
I would never trust any of that shit, ever. I'm never trusting that shit. Get a bigger forehead. Get a smaller forehead. No, I don't know. I mean, God, I'm just trying to think, like, what makes me clingy? Distance makes the heart grow fonder. For real, though. Like, just leave town. Don't tell him. Make him think you're missing. Don't even tell your family. Have your family search for you. Go to another country. Go to Peru and change your name and get a fake passport, fake ID. Like, really Liam Neeson the shit, or Bourne Identity the shit, Jason Bourne it, and then come back like 2 months later, I guarantee you he will never let you go. He'll never let you go.
Make it look real legit.
Better advice than spending $500,000 on your face. But you know, then no procedure. You just leave to enjoy Peru. Go to the Amazon, go to, you know, Spain. I don't know. Go travel. Get a fake passport, though. You don't want nobody finding you.
Good okay. idea. Yeah.
You and then when you trackable. Come back, be like, I was so scared. Or just, I don't, you know.
Be like, I left because you didn't respond to my DMs on Instagram. So are you going to do that again? No.
Yeah.
You
never.
So.
Dude, you don't even got to say that. You don't even got to say that. Is her DMs are going to be like, hey, he's gonna be like, where are you? Are you safe?
Yeah. And if he starts to forget, just start to post TBT, Throwback Thursday, Peru
pictures
picks.
Of you tied up in Peru.
Not even having a good time, just in this dungeon. Oh,
yep.
God.
Yep.
Well, that's fantastic. Good. I think that's solid advice. All right. Let's do one more. Our fan Tony found question 2 from Reddit. How do I grow my poetry page? So I'm a 21-year-old college student who has always done well in all my writing classes. I enjoy poetry and just made a page on Instagram to put some of my stuff out there. How do I help make it grow? Someone told me to tell my friends to follow the page, but I've always been insecure about my poetry, even more so because I'm a guy, lol. Any thoughts? Thanks in advance. Sincerely, pros before hoes.
Yeah, I don't have any advice for this person, except not everything is for everybody, okay? Not everything is for everybody. If you don't want to promote yourself, you quit. You know what I mean? Then you don't really want to do it. You don't really want people to, you know, follow you. You don't want people to like your stuff. Quit. Okay? And then also pretend to be ashamed of yourself. You don't got to pretend. It sounds like you're very ashamed of yourself. It sounds like you're very ashamed of this poetry. So, yeah, dude, you just got to find something else that you can be proud of. You know what I'm saying? Find something else you can be proud of. That's my advice.
I love that.
And not everything is for everybody.
So we could. So there was the direction of maybe getting him towards the direction of being proud of himself, or just completely shutting him down and telling him to stop poetry forever.
I'm gonna go ahead and shut him down because I'm saying find something else to be proud of. Because if you're not proud of your poetry and you want to grow your, how are you gonna? That's conflicting ideologies.
Right.
You know.
Has there ever been anything that you've wanted to do but are ashamed?
No, I've tried and failed at a lot of shit.
Okay.
Was never ashamed, but I've definitely failed at a lot of shit. You know, I played music before I did comedy, and oh man, it's gonna be shameful, but we're gonna let you know. I was the lead guitarist and screamer in a screamo band.
No way.
In high school, in high school and a little bit of college.
What was the band name?
I tried. Oh, dude, people are going to look it up. It's on Spotify. Check us out. Silence Before Sunrise. Because it was 2010, 2008, or whatever year it was. And, Ohio's for Lovers was a banger. And, Taking Back Sunday was at the top of the emo charts. It was a good time.
Does your quote, "Not everything is for everybody," is that one of the top songs on there?
Dude, honestly, we were pretty good. Not going to lie. We had won several Battle of the Bands. We had worked with, like, some huge emo artists at the time. Like, we opened for The Devil Wears Prada. I don't know if you know who that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know who that is? Yeah, dude. We were a hot band in Atlanta. It was funny. It was MySpace days,
obviously.
Oh,
hell yeah.
And what happened is we had good music, but it wasn't getting out there. So we paid a MySpace promoter for some reason. Like, there was, like, a guy who promoted bands on MySpace, and he was expensive. I remember, like, it was, like, $500. I mean, I was, like, 18, 19, right. And he was expensive, but he got our shit out there, and we started getting fans coming to shows because this guy was really fucking good. And he had worked with a bunch of, like, reputable bands on MySpace. And after that, like, we were popping. But the issue was schedule. The issue was, like, oh, the drummer can't make it, or, oh, he's doing a fucking thing in North Carolina, or fuck. So we just couldn't keep up with schedule. So I quit first because I was like, I don't want to deal with anybody's schedule. I started stand-up because guess what? That's just my schedule. I don't need four other dudes to show up to help me tell dick jokes. So I started doing stand-up. I was doing stand-up while I was in the band for a minute, but then eventually I was like, you know what, fuck this. I'm just going to go do stand-up because I don't need four other dudes. But we were a good screamo band, man. I'm not even going to trip on it. I mean, if you listen to it now, it's dog shit because that genre is dog shit. But it's but for what it was, we weren't bad. Huh. So, yeah, some things were for me. But that was one thing I tried. I've tried a bunch of other shit and been bad at it.
You didn't even fail at it, though. You were good at it, and then you decided, I'm done with this because I don't need four other guys.
It was too hard, man. The thing about it is, like, it's like anything else. It takes a serious level of commitment. And honestly, what's funny is I'm glad I quit because that genre died. You know what I mean? So it's like, what if I no shade, and I hope he doesn't hear this, but I do know a kid who stayed in it, and it's a sad life. You know what I mean? He's still trying to make his emo dreams come true. And I'm like, yo, man, like, maybe it doesn't exist anymore. You know?
Does he still dress the part? Does he still have the long, straight?
He's got the hair. He's got the hair. He's got the pants. He's got, what pants I'm talking about? Pants that are, like, four sizes
too
small with holes in
them. The ones that are suffocating. Yeah, cutting off circulation to your legs.
Yeah. Right, right. I don't think he's felt his fucking calves in 3 years. No. But, I definitely tried it. And we were good. We were very good. We had won competitions. We made money. We did a bunch of great shows. We did, like, huge venues. Like, we sold out places. Like, we were a good band, but the level of commitment it takes to do that, you would have to live with those guys and then, like, practice every day for years. And then the genre died. So, what are you going to do?
Damn. I guess quit and do stand-up, which is the right choice here.
Quit and do stand-up. Genre didn't die. Yet.
Nice.
We'll see.
So that's excellent, Neil. Really appreciate that. And I'm sure Pros Before Hoes does too. Quit and find something else that you'll be proud of.
Please.
There you go. All right. Well, that's the end of our show. Thank you to all of our listeners who stayed with us. Huge thank you to Neil Nanda. Neil, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Venmo, Grindr. you can find me in the club, Bottle Full of Bub, Mama, I Got What You Need. you can find me in St. Louis. I think that's a lyric. You can find me anywhere, man. It's at Neil Nanda. It's NEELNANDA. It's two E's because I'm foreign. And follow me on everywhere. You can find me on the YouTubes. My dad's real proud of that. I've got like 2 hours of material on YouTube and on Instagram, and I'm going to continue to put out material when it's legal to do shows again.
Nice. Neil Nanda puts out, everybody. Well, thank you so much, Neil. All of those are going to be in the show notes, and along with the Spotify for Fears for Tears or whatever.
Silence Before
yes,
Sunrise?
Yeah, that was it.
I begged them not to put it up there, too. This was like a year ago. They were like, should we do it? And I was like, please don't. And then they were like, already did it. And I was like, someone's going to find this. This is going to be a problem. They'd be like, is that you screaming? And it is.
That's
so check
that's
it out.
That's awesome. If it makes you feel any better, I too was in a band. It was not screamo, though, but it was kind of.
Was it pop punk?
That's it. It was pop punk.
Yeah, you look pop punk. You were the people. I used to shit on you guys. I feel like pussies.
We would do these showcases, and then it would be like eight or so bands, and it would be screamo, 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 us, screamo, 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 reggae.
Just so you know, all those bands hated you guys.
Oh, they did. There was one band, they were like, hey, you guys are good. Are you guys a Christian band? And I was like, no, we're not. We just don't scream, I guess. And he was like, all right.
Yeah, we hated you.
So I also...
Hey, man, not everything's for everybody.
There you go. That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Neil. Thank you, everybody. And we'll talk at you next week. Bye-bye.